This is Politics Up Close on KCB at Applegill. I'm Jeff Robinson. He voted against the so-called Obamacare law, and he's endorsed by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Those are just a few of the things that Blue Dog Democratic Congressman Jim Matheson is reminding voters about as he campaigns in a new district this election year. But Republicans are pouring whatever resources they can into the campaign of his opponent, Saratoga Springs Mayor Mia Love. How does Matheson plan to win this November as he campaigns in the state's new 4th District with the boundaries drawn by the Republican-dominated Utah legislature? The congressman joins me now in the studio to discuss what lies ahead for him this election cycle. And, Congressman, it's good to have you back.
Well, thank you, Jeff. I appreciate it.
Listeners, join us on the air with your questions and comments for Congressman Jim Matheson. Our number is 801-355-TALK. That's 801-355-8255. Well, Congressman, to start off, you've talked about this a little bit, but what led to your decision to run in the 4th District this year, the newly created one in the middle of the state, rather than District 2, which you currently represent?
Well, because District 2 doesn't exist anymore. Just because it has a number next to it that says number 2 doesn't mean it's the current congressional district at all. What the legislature did is they took the district I currently represent, they split it up. Multiple ways. They carved it up because they didn't want my constituents to have the opportunity to be represented by me anymore. So looking at the map, there was no existing district to consider. What I considered was where the most people lived who I have represented in my career, and that was the 4th District, and that's why I'm running there.
Now, Salt Lake City, though, a pretty Democratic stronghold, is still in District 2. Would that not have been a good consideration to take?
Actually, if you want to base it on party performance, District 4 is a more Democratic district than District 2.
Oh, wow. So do you view the results of last year's congressional redistricting done by Republicans as another attempt then to draw you out of a seat, or what exactly?
Oh, I think we all know that. I mean, they put on the charade of putting out 17 public meetings around the state, and there's a committee that produced a whole bunch of maps. They said these are the ones we're considering. And then when push comes to shove and it was time for the legislature to vote on it, they threw all that work out the window, came up with a map 20 minutes before they voted. No one had really seen it. We all know that's the game they're playing, and we've seen it before, and it's just kind of one of the unfortunate aspects of politics, or the way congressional boundaries are drawn.
So, Congressman Matheson, you've served 6 terms in the U.S. House of Representatives, or 12 years. A pretty good amount of time, especially for a Democrat from Utah. Is there anything in particular you really want to accomplish with another 2 years or more than that?
Sure. I think that there are a few things that are really important to talk about. Number one, I hear so much from folks about the economy and jobs. I think it's been the number one issue on the minds of constituents since clearly since the mortgage meltdown that took place in the fall of 2008. Mm-hmm. And I think there are important issues we ought to talk about to help put our economy on a path to greater prosperity. One is creating greater certainty. There's so much uncertainty in the public policy world that's unnecessary. We need Congress in a bipartisan way to set some long-term policies, be it tax policy, be it regulatory policy, be it energy policy. I want to be part of those discussions because I think that's the path we want to take if we really want to move our country forward.
So you feel this election really is entirely pretty much about the economy. This is not going to be a year, well, we've seen recently with the controversy with Todd Akin, it might still be a year for social issues, but for you, is it all about the economy then?
Well, I think every campaign has its own dynamics for each individual office, and circumstances in different states may create different issues that come up. So I don't want to make too much of a generalized comment about what the election is going to be about across the country. But I do think here it's going to be about electing someone who is a practical, constructive person who wants to get things done. And you know, what I hear from people beyond the economy is I hear most people are pretty frustrated with our politics these days. They don't like the bickering. They don't like the polarization. Mm-hmm. They're looking for people who are willing to work constructively with people on both sides of the aisle to get things done. And it's one thing to say you're an independent voice. It's one thing to say you work with people across the aisle. It's another thing to have actually done it. And I have a track record that I'm real proud of in that regard. And I think that's the other key factor in this election.
This is Politics Up Close on KCB at Applegill. I'm Jeff Robinson. We're speaking right now with Democratic Utah Congressman Jim Matheson, who's running in the 4th District this year. Our phone number, join us on the air, is 801-355-TALK, 801-355-8255. You can also send your tweets to us here at KCPW. Congressman, what do you think of your opponent in this election, Saratoga Springs Mayor Mia Love, and how qualified she is compared to some of the folks you've run against in the past?
Well, I think that my opponent has a compelling personal story and life history, and I admire that. I do think her politics are more extreme than anyone I've ever run against in my career, pretty far out on the right. And I think it's important that as we move forward in this election, people fully understand the difference on issues, because there's a pretty big contrast between the two of us. And the other contrast beyond the issues is that of experience, of having life experience to get things done in Congress. You know, I like to tell people, before I ever got in politics, I had a whole different career working in the energy industry. I think that that's important to have different perspectives as you approach this job. And I think those are two key factors that are going to be in this race.
Well, what is it that you think makes her more extreme? Is it her issues on cutting spending, or what exactly?
Well, she said she wants to end entitlements altogether. Literally in one speech said, let's phase out Social Security. I haven't heard anybody saying that. I've heard people advocate for privatization, which she's also done, so she's moved around a little bit on this issue. But she said, let's phase it out. I don't think most people agree with that. I think people value Social Security. We all know it needs to be reformed in a way to make it more sustainable for the future. But I think that's I just think that goes too far. It may be issues like eliminating the Department of Education. That's pretty extreme. You know, the federal role in Department of Education is primarily dealing with funding of special education programs, and I don't think the state of Utah has a lot of extra resources to make up the difference for special ed in our state. And I think the parents of those kids ought to be really concerned about that, or be it for post high school education, getting rid of all student grants, loans, work study. That's how Utahns pay for college. Data I've seen, at least 75% of all kids in Utah, and adults, because it's not just kids who go to post-secondary school, mm-hmm. are utilizing federal aid as a way to pay for that. That's something that is sort of our investment in the future. And again, I don't think this is particularly ideological. I think most people think this is just a good idea. And so, you know, those are a couple of examples of things where I just don't think that my opponent is necessarily in line with where most people in Utah are. I mean, even let me just say on the student loan, even Mitt Romney, of course, supports student loans. When we had the debate in Congress this summer about whether or not the lower student loan rate should be maintained, both Mitt Romney and President Obama said, let's keep the lower rate. They both supported student loans. So, again, I think most people in both parties feel like that's a good thing to do, but my opponent does not.
Congressman, you're no stranger to being attacked by Republicans on a national level, but were you expecting this onslaught of GOP celebrities, folks like Speaker Boehner, Paul Ryan, John McCain, Condoleezza Rice next month, all coming to Utah to really try and help your opponent and to defeat you? Were you prepared for this?
You know, it's happened before. You know, first time I ran, we had all kinds of folks from Washington, too. But what's interesting is none of these people are from Utah, and they don't really know Utah, and they're really doing what they do. They're doing their party duty. And I think it's a nice contrast that the folks advocating for our opponent are a bunch of national party people. And the time I have someone come from out of state, for me, it's a nonpartisan interest group that wants to grow our economy, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and they came out to endorse me in the race. So outside of that, I don't have outsiders coming in here. I'm spending my time talking with people in Utah every day. And ultimately, I guess this sounds obvious, but ultimately this election is decided by voters in Utah. And that's always been my focus. And I think that that's going to serve me well.
Now, on the flip side of that coin, though, Congressman, surely the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee sees it as an asset to try to help you hang on to the seat as well. Aren't they helping you out to some extent?
Well, you can look at the data for TV purchases. It's public record, and they have made some purchases for television over the next few weeks. I don't think it's of the magnitude that the National Republican Party has, but sure, they've also engaged. You know, it's interesting. We're in this world now with independent expenditures, it's called, or super PAC money from third parties. You know, there are a bunch that are going to come in on this race on both sides. I understand that. But at the end of the day, I think people in Utah value their vote pretty seriously, and they size up the two individuals and vote based on individual and not on party.
Can I ask, since you brought it up, what is your opinion about the super PAC spending and the Citizens United decision that really led to this onslaught of third-party advertising?
Well, I think all of us are a little troubled by – or I shouldn't say a little. I think all of us are troubled by the amount of money in politics these days. I think that it would be in an ideal sense, you have campaigns being discussions between candidates and voters. To me, that's sort of what campaigns ought to be all about. I certainly do respect the First Amendment to the Constitution and the ability of other people to communicate. But nonetheless, this is one that, as I said, I think we're all a little troubled about the extraordinary proportion of all the dialogue that's going to take place. It's going to be driven outside by parties that are not the two campaigns.
This is Politics Up Close. My guest is Congressman Jim Matheson. We're going to take a short break. Join us on the air with your questions, 801-355-TALK, 801-355-8255. We'll be right back with more Politics Up Close on KCBW. You are listening to Politics Up Close here on KCBW. I'm Jeff Robinson. My guest is Democratic Utah Congressman Jim Matheson. He's running in the state's 4th Congressional District this year. 801-355-TALK is the number to join us on the air, 801-355-8255. You can also send your tweets to us at KCPW. Congressman, let's discuss a recent vote that you took that got a lot of attention. You opposed the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, dubbed Obamacare, back when it was first passed in 2010, we should note. Later, you voted against repealing the bill, but more recently, in the past few months, you were one of only 5 congressional Democrats to vote in favor of repealing it. Was that a tough vote, a difficult vote for you to take, or was it one you were pretty much set on for a while?
Yeah, look, I've always opposed this bill because I don't think it achieves what we want to achieve. I support the goal of creating a system where everyone has access to affordable health care that's also of good quality. I support that goal. I think we all do. And my concern is that the legislation is not going to meet the needs we have to. There was a point at which there were a number of constitutional questions that needed to be addressed by the Supreme Court. That's why I thought it was important to let the Supreme Court have their say in the issue. But from the policy perspective, as Justice Roberts said, it's up to the legislative branch to talk about policy. And I think that we need to have a much more detailed, less vitriolic, and quite frankly, in many ways, less ideological discussion about health care, because there's a lot of things we ought to be talking about in our health care system, not one or two or three variables. There are hundreds of items we ought to be talking about that I believe provide great opportunities for a more efficient, cost-effective, higher-quality health care system in America than what we have now.
Now, I know there are parts of the bill that you were in support of, for example, letting children stay on their parents' health insurance until an older age, the age of 26. Do you think the GOP has offered any ideas that you like as well?
Well, first of all, there's no doubt there's some components of the bill that are attractive to a lot of us. And what's interesting is the marketplace has responded. You know, most all the major insurance companies in America have announced, this is in advance of the Supreme Court decision, mind you, but they said even if it's thrown out by the Supreme Court, we're going to maintain that coverage for kids until they're 26. Mm-hmm. We're going to maintain getting rid of the lifetime coverage caps. I think those were some positive signs that the legislation, that the components of it that a lot of people agree with, the marketplace is saying, this is a need people want, and we're going to move that direction. So I do think that, first of all, there are some aspects of the bill that we all think are important if we get into the details, and I hope they can be put in place one way or another. Aspects that weren't in the bill, there are a couple of obvious ones. One is the fact that we need to deal with tort reform in this country. The malpractice dynamic in this country is driving up health care costs. It's creating multiple unnecessary procedures. Some estimates say about 30% of all the procedures that are performed in the United States of America, medical procedures, are not medically necessary. And I'm not saying tort reform and defensive medicine are driving all of that 30%, but I would submit that it's a significant factor. And I've always been an advocate for looking for steps to try to eliminate that wasteful activity in our healthcare system. It creates such a huge opportunity for us to do better. And so that's one quick example of what I'd like to see in healthcare legislation that wasn't included in the bill.
Where did you come down on the individual mandate really at the heart of the bill, the idea that people who think they shouldn't have to get health insurance really should, because it's a necessary part of the market?
Well, I think that this is a question that ought to be addressed in the context of what do we do to best create a pool. Mm-hmm. A pool of individuals, because that's sort of what the basis is of insurance. And how do we avoid free riders? How do we avoid a situation where people wait and don't have insurance when they could afford it, get hurt, go to the emergency room, and taxpayers are picking up the bill anyway? This is the tough issue. Whether the mandate is the right structure to do it or not, I'm not so sure. But I do think that there's a broader discussion we need to have about how do you encourage a pooling of risk? Because at the heart of insurance, that's what it is. And make sure people are being fair about it. And that you don't have some people paying a disproportionate component of the health insurance premiums where others are getting a free ride. I think that's the discussion we need to have.
Now, I know on your Facebook page after you announced your vote, there are quite a few comments from angry Democrats. Did you hear from a lot of them?
Look, I respect that this is, first of all, a very emotional issue. Healthcare is a very personal issue. We all relate to healthcare in some way, each as an individual. And I certainly respect everyone's opinion who feels strongly about it. As I said, I certainly share the goal that most of us have of making sure we have people have access to quality, affordable care. My concern is we're on a path that is not sustainable, that the cost structure of our healthcare system continues to increase at a rate greater than inflation every year, and that's not going to be sustainable. The Affordable Care Act doesn't actually provide coverage for everyone. It made progress, and that's laudable. But I think we have to have, a broader discussion. I think we need to look at what I would call, not to get into too much jargon, but healthcare delivery system reform. I don't think that the Affordable Care Act had a lot of the overall healthcare delivery system reform. Mm-hmm. The Affordable Care Act tended to get into a box of health insurance reform, which is important. It's an important issue, but I think it missed the bigger set of issues we really need to talk about to create a sustainable future for our healthcare system.
Congressman, let's talk about public lands, an issue that's certainly been highlighted for the past 6 months. You tend to have more moderate to conservative positions on public lands. It's a very important part of the state. But what do you think of this effort we're seeing now on the legislative level to demand from the federal government you will hand all these lands back to the state of Utah?
Well, the fact that their own counsel, their own attorney said this isn't going to happen, I'm not sure the legislature should be pursuing this in court. I don't know that that's a very good use of taxpayer money. Maybe they feel justified in ignoring the advice of their own attorney, and they're going to pursue it anyway. But as a Utah, just as an individual citizen, Utah taxpayer, I'd like to think we're being prudent about how we invest our money in lawsuits and whatnot in this state. Just that's one answer to your question about some actions that are going to be taken based on that law. Look, I get the frustration some people have about the land ownership pattern in Utah. I think that we need to have a real pragmatic and constructive discussion about what we can do to make progress on this. I think it is highly unlikely the federal government's just going to turn over all the land to the state of Utah. Mm-hmm. Whether people agree or disagree that what it should be, I just think, practically speaking, we ought to acknowledge what's going to happen or not happen in this country. And I think that's pretty unlikely. So I'm the type of guy who's looking for some constructive discussions to get things done. And I think I have a record of doing it. When I worked with Senator Bennett for 5 years to pass the Washington County Lands Bill in southern Utah, it's the first major public lands bill passed for Utah since 1984. And it took a lot of work. And we had 23 different stakeholder groups that all sat around the table. So often public lands discussions get reduced to these simplistic two-dimensional arguments like there's only 2 points of view. There were really 23 points of view at the table. We created wilderness. We created off-road vehicle trails. We created corridors for utilities. We created a map for the future for Washington County that all these different groups that used to shout at each other all bought into. And so I think that those types of discussions would be more productive to resolve issues, create greater certainty for the future, and we could all move forward. And I think that's the model we ought to be looking at. And just as a tangential discussion here, I have to say on one specific issue, which is issue of roads through the – it's called RS-2477. Right. There's a group that's been meeting right now, a group of all the different stakeholders, and they picked one county to start with, Iron County in this case. And I just got a briefing 2 weeks ago from them. Governor's office is involved. Different folks are involved. And they really feel like they're making a lot of progress on just resolving these issues. And again, I think it's amazing what you can accomplish in life if you get everyone sitting around the table talking to each other instead of people isolated throwing verbal volleys where they're not in the same room. So that's the type of discussion I'd like to see on our public lands, because I'll tell you what, we all love our state. And those of us who live here, we all think it's a magnificent place and we value it and treasure it so much. So I think we actually have a lot of common ground amongst all of us about how we feel about this state. And I wish our discussions could start from that point.
On the same public lands note, Congressman, there is this ski link bill in Congress sponsored by your Republican colleagues there in Utah's delegation. Some local leaders like Mayors Becker and Caroon adamantly oppose it, saying it's the top-down approach that they do not want to see. What are your thoughts on this ski link bill? Do you think that it should be blocked by the Senate?
Well, there's no question it was a top-down approach. Nobody in Utah was involved. It's just a bill written in Washington. And I don't think that's the way we should be making public lands decisions. In fact, a lot of the people more on the right side of the political equation like to complain about Washington telling Utah what to do. In this case, the interesting contrast, since this is located in the Wasatch Canyons, is an effort that I've been working on for about 3 years now to pass legislation that preserves the watershed and this watershed protection in these Wasatch Canyons. You know, we who live along the Wasatch Front almost take for granted that there's no place in America where you have this spectacular scenic mountain land right next to a million people in the Salt Lake Valley. The interface is right there, and the pressures there are intense on that resource. And it's where about 500,000 people in Salt Lake County get their water. And I think we all value clean water. And so I've worked, again, with multiple stakeholders, and Salt Lake County was the facilitator that made this happen. We met for several months working on legislation. We introduced one bill. We got comments in a hearing. We've since updated the bill to address concerns from the Forest Service and the landowners and Big and Little Cottonwood Canyon and the mountain bikers and all these different organizations that are interested. And we've got Snowbird and Save Our Canyons on the same page. And they've been arguing for decades, and now they agree on this bill. That's the approach we ought to take through that bottom-up approach of getting all the stakeholders in Utah around the table for that type of bill. That's how we ought to do it. The ski link bill didn't do any of that, number one. And number two, ironically, the ski link bill proposes to put the ski link gondola right through an area that our legislation, our consensus legislation, suggested should be set aside for watershed protection. So it ignored what our public process said was an area that ought to be protected. So I hope we can go about this in a more thoughtful way.
This is Politics Up Close. We have just a few minutes left with Utah Congressman Jim Matheson, a candidate this year in the state's 4th congressional district. Congressman Matheson, one issue that has not really been talked about much at all this election, because there's little appetite for either party, really, is gun control. Even in the wake of the shooting in Denver, the shooting in Wisconsin, there was a shooting this morning near the Empire State Building that killed 2 people. Where do you come down on this debate? Do you think there is room for more discussion on gun control in Washington? Would you like to see it?
Well, first of all, we all abhor these tragic acts that you mentioned. It's horrible what happened, and it's hard for us to imagine what was going on in the minds of those perpetrators that brought them to the point where they took those actions. And when it comes to violence in society, there are a lot of complex issues we ought to be talking about in terms of trying to mitigate those circumstances where people get into that state of mind and are engaged in that. And I think, quite candidly, that's what we ought to be focused on. You said that there's neither appetite for gun control. There isn't. I think most people in this country do not think we ought to change the existing gun laws we have in our country today, nor do I. I think that we have to take a broader, more thoughtful look at what's the cause of these violence acts. These violence acts occur in different ways. It's not just with guns. And so I think there's a broader issue that we as a society ought to be talking about. And I don't claim to have all the answers on how we avoid people getting into that state of mind. I really don't. But I do think that's the conversation we ought to have.
There is a conversation, though, about simply the fact that you can legally purchase assault weapons. And there's the issue every time we change administrations of the assault weapons ban and renewing it. Really, does it serve any productive purpose to continue to allow people to purchase these items legally?
Well, let's first of all define what these are. These are semi-automatic weapons. Mm-hmm. No one can buy automatic weapons. That's been against the law in the United States for decades. What's interesting is when the semi-automatic weapon ban went into place in the 90s and then it expired at some point several years later, what's interesting is there was no appreciable difference in acts of violence in this country, whether it was in place or not, by multiple studies, not just one. And so, again, while some people hope that that would have the impact of reducing acts of violence, the data shows that it didn't. And that really, again, sort of validates my previous comments about we have to have a broader discussion about circumstances that are getting people in a state of mind where they do these bad things and steps we can take, if there are any, that can help mitigate that. I think that's the focus we ought to take.
Finally, in our last minute, Congressman Matheson, what are we going to see in the next couple of weeks when it comes to your campaign? I know last election cycle, towards the end, there were some more negative advertisements from both your campaign and your opponent's campaign. What are we going to see from the Matheson campaign? Will there be attack ads on Mia Love and her record?
Well, first of all, there are going to be a lot of ads that aren't my campaign or my opponents. In fact, the National Republican Party started ads today, I understand. At least they made a buy, and there may be other ads from other groups starting up in the next couple of weeks. I don't have anything going up next week, by the way, for my own campaign. What I'm going to be doing is what I always do. I go and I talk with Utahns, and I learn what their issues are, and I think it makes me a better congressman. I think that's what you ought to do. I say I put Utah first. I really do. I think that's the key difference that's going to be in this race. I think my opponent's going to put party first, and I put Utah first.
We've been speaking with Utah Congressman Jim Matheson, a Blue Dog Democrat. He's running in the state's 4th congressional district. His opponent is Saratoga Springs Mayor Mia Love, who will be on this program in September. Congressman Matheson, thank you very much for your time.
Okay, thank you, Jeff. I appreciate it.
This is Politics Up Close, a production of KCPW News. Thank you to Jennifer Napier-Pierce for her help with the program today. I'm Jeff Robinson. Tune in every Friday morning at 9 and Sunday morning at 6, and download podcasts of our interviews online at kcpw.org. Thanks for joining us.